This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. WUNC's youth radio reporters are wrapping up their summer here. Every year, a group of young journalists create radio stories as part of the station's Youth Reporting Institute. They pitch their ideas, they go out in the field with a recorder, and then they come back to the studio, put all the pieces together, and on Friday, they leave us pizza. The result is a diverse group of stories told from inside their communities. The stories are going to air on Saturdays on WUNC, and that happens through September. You can also check out the website, WUNC.org, and you will find their stories there as well. Once they're up there right now, joining us in the studio, Emmanuel Tobe is going to be going into his first year at Elon University. Hello, Emmanuel.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. And this is your second year with the program, so you should know better. Anthony Howard's going to be a junior at Wakefield High School in Raleigh. Hello, Anthony.
Hello, how are you doing?
Good. And Skylar Fisher is going into her first year at UNC Chapel Hill. Hello.
That's right. Thank you.
Good to have you here. Well, Kamaya Truitt-Martin is with us as well, project mentor for the Youth Reporting Institute and has been part of the program for 6 years. Hi, Kamaya.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing well. Tell us more about this institute now, because for you, you've been at it for a while. You went through it. But for our audience who doesn't know what's going on, lay it out for us.
So it's a 6 to 7 week process. We got an extra week this time around, and we basically teach kids who don't know anything about radio how to make and produce their own pieces. So we teach them how to interview, how to record, edit, use Adobe Audition software, voice, everything that you need to know. And we use the help from around the station to just get them to the point where they make dope pieces for the air.
This is your sixth year. What keeps bringing you back? We're happy to see you, of course.
Yes, yes. I mean, it's just hearing and seeing everybody develop more and hearing the new people, the new stories coming out from the youth. It's just crazy. Like, it increases in dopeness each year. So that's what keeps me coming back, because otherwise, you know, I just flip burgers at McDonald's for the rest of my life.
No. You will never be doing that. Tell us about your role as mentor. What do you do?
So Allison Swain and I, we work with them intensely the entire 6 to 7 weeks to just make sure that they schedule their interviews right, that they know how to do everything that they need to do. We're like their guardian angels for the next 6 to 7 weeks. And we communicate with David Brower to make sure that everybody's stories are
Program
in line.
Program director, WUNC. Yes. Go ahead.
Sorry about that.
No, it's all right.
To make sure that everybody's story is in line with what we're trying to communicate and open this door to the world of youth thoughts and minds to give our listeners something different that they haven't heard before. So,
and we're going to hear a little sample of that. Emmanuel, I want to start with you because you're looking at the achievement gap in your high school. Tell us more about that story.
So, yeah, as you said, my story is about the achievement gap and basically how a group of students kind of came together and just worked to solve it, or not, you know, completely solve it, but just kind of work to create this tradition of, you know, everyone working together and trying to fix this issue.
All right. Well, I'm going to play a little clip from that right now, and then we'll talk more about it when we come back. Let's listen to this.
Maybe the most obvious lesson I got from my AP psychology class was about math. There were some numbers that just didn't seem to add up. I was one of 5 blacks out of 32 students, but my school is over 40% black. It felt weird. It made me wonder if I actually belonged. Jaden Jules is a friend of mine. He experienced a similar feeling at North Carolina's Governor School. I met him at Starbucks, somewhere we've talked about this stuff before.
And I just kept racking my brain about why were the reasons why more black people were not at Governor School. And I just concluded that there are just some educational inequalities that were happening in North Carolina.
After Governor School, Jaden decided to take on the achievement gap, starting at our school. He called me and a few of our friends, and together we formed the Riverside High School Black Student Union. But we got some pushback from the school administration.
All right, there's a clip from youth radio reporter Emmanuel Tobe's story, part of the WUNC Youth Reporting Institute. He joins me with youth radio reporters Anthony Howard and Skylar Fisher, and also project mentor Kamaya Truitt-Martin. So what was the pushback?
So, I don't want to spoil too much of it, because, but
you got to tell us that.
I got to tell you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, the administration, well, at the time, you know, there was a lot of political, I guess, craziness and hecticness going on, just, you know, not just in the school, but in the country.
Unlike today.
Unlike today, you know.
Yeah.
We solved it now.
Okay,
we're trying, though. But,
yeah.
But, yeah, so, you know, they didn't want us to really use the word black in the name, because they felt like that would be too controversial. As well as, you know, just it would exclude groups of people. But, you know, in our opinion, you know, there was different clubs for different groups or different organizations right. for, you know, Hispanics, for QSA and stuff like that. But there's nothing really to help, like, struggling black students at the school. So we really wanted to just work and to just create something for that.
And how did that turn out?
To me, it turned out great.
But, I mean, did you get to keep the name?
We did get to keep the name. We had to fight for it, but yeah. We got to keep the name. And just we really feel like the name is something really important. You know, it really kind of signifies what the club is trying to do. You know, the not just black in the name, but the fact that it's a student union and it's student-led means that, you know, it's black students who are all working together.
So this is interesting now. There's coalition. There are people on campus who at the high school who recognize there's a problem. They start a club. You're part of that. You recognize what the problem is. You want to get things done. That makes you an activist. Then you become a reporter to report on that. What's that like for you, kind of changing hands?
Well, I think it is changing hands. And to me, it kind of just taught me a lot. You know, as being a reporter, I can't really put my opinion stuff in the piece. So, you know, I can't really put how I feel about the club or, you know, I can't really express my beliefs or, you know, try to be an activist and, like, create conversations. I have to let my piece create those conversations. So that aspect of it was really different, but it was still really fun.
Well, let's move on and talk to Anthony about your story. It looks at racially charged one particular incident, or I guess a couple of them, in series that took place this spring at your school, Wakefield High School. Tell us more about it.
So my story basically centers around the incident that happened late May. And if some of the listeners don't know about it, it's pretty much four students were kind of retaliating against Smart Lunch, and they wanted it back. They wanted Wakefield to return to the normal Wakefield that they had in previous years. So it's about students' feelings and how they felt initially about the incident and everything they're hoping to do in this upcoming year to make this school year better.
Well, let's listen to a little clip.
Here's a list of senior pranks we've seen in years past at Wakefield High School. Tying a trash can to a flagpole, scattering balloons on the floor, placing a painted cow on top of the roof. But what happened this year? Was something else.
There have been five racially charged incidents in Wake County schools since March. The latest just yesterday. Someone hung a teddy bear from a noose at Wakefield High.
Did you see that stuffed animal hanging from the rope outside of the school? And I was like, okay, I know that's what I saw, and I wasn't just imagining things.
Yeah, both students and employees at that school saw what was hanging from Wakefield High School earlier this morning.
And then I went back to my second period, and I was like, I promise y'all, if y'all say something to me, I'm gonna go off. So don't say anything about it.
Multiple media outlets report four Wakefield High students are facing misdemeanor charges for hanging a teddy bear by a noose outside the school.
I don't feel like you can say like, oh, he hung a black doll and be like, oh, but he didn't mean it that way because of all the history rooted within that.
That's a clip of Youth Radio reporter Anthony Howard's story, part of the WNC Youth Reporting Institute this summer. So you included in the clip the news reports of that incident. It was reported
yes.
widely. What do you think you bring to the story as somebody kind of from the inside and somebody who's younger than any of those folks we heard?
I think I bring a more personal perspective on this topic because when you hear it from ABC 11 and WRL, it's kind of impersonal. They're looking from the outside in, whereas I'm looking from the inside out. And so I think it's really important because I had the connections to really talk to people who were motivated about making change, people in the Black Student Union, people who were in student committees hoping to make this school year better. So I think definitely this makes it more personal and meaningful in a way that it can't be done with somebody who's just a basic reporter.
Now, I said that you were younger than the other reporters, except Eric Hodge, who I think is still 13. He's just a kid. He's just a kid. He's brilliant for being that young. But you talked about being on the inside, okay, that's one thing. And then you heard Emmanuel talk about this difficulty. Well, what do you do as a reporter? On the one hand, yeah, you have better access. Yeah, you have better insight into the story. You're there. On the other hand, now you've got to step back a little bit. How did you manage that?
Yeah, that was extremely difficult for me because at first I really wanted to put my opinion into this piece. I wanted to make sure that not only were the people I interviewed speaking for themselves, but also I was speaking based on my personal experience and my personal feelings. So that was hard, kind of letting the pieces speak for themselves and letting their voices tell my story and tell how I felt in a way. And I don't know, just trying to, over time, just make sure that I was comfortable in the fact that my story was good and good enough so that my message and this important topic would get across and affect so many people. And I think it's done that, and I think I'm really proud of that. And so I'm happy. I don't think my opinion would really matter in this piece.
You should be. It's a good piece, as is Emmanuel's. And Skylar, I want to talk to you about yours. Your story looks at harm reduction. Tell us more about that, harm reduction in drug use, right?
Yes. So for the past 2 years, I've been volunteering with the North Carolina Harm Reduction Coalition. And what they do is, instead of just encouraging drug users to stop using, is they'll meet people where they are and help them even if they're still using. And they'll actually try and reduce the harm of the drugs that they're doing.
And not just help in counseling, but also help with other methods that are safer methods. So this is what's controversial about it, right?
Yes. A lot of what's controversial is a lot of people think that giving out things like naloxone, which is a drug that reverses overdoses, they think it's enabling drug users. But a lot of what people that I interviewed were saying is that it's just giving people another chance to make a different choice. Even if they don't agree with what they're doing, it's better to stay alive, you know, doing this thing that a lot of people don't agree with, even if it's just better.
Seems to be enabling. Well, that is the controversy and the core of the thing. Let's listen to a clip of Skylar's piece.
Louise helps people survive their addictions. Advocates call it harm reduction. Her staff and volunteers run a syringe exchange program to minimize the spread of hepatitis and HIV. They also give out naloxone, a drug that reverses opiate overdoses. Some police and most EMTs have naloxone on hand, but Louise's group gives it out directly to users. The group even encourages people to smoke their drugs instead of injecting them.
So this is a meth pipe. So, and it's just a glass pipe.
Louise is unpacking a meth kit. The clean pipe helps users smoke more safely.
Like so. And people use, like, light bulbs and all sorts of stuff that's really dangerous. You know, just to have a nice glass pipe that you're not going to cut or burn yourself, you're not going to, like, all of that stuff, those are all put you at risk for disease. Because when you're talking about high-risk people that, I mean, when you're talking about groups of people where almost everybody has hepatitis C, then it doesn't take much to transmit it. Mm-hmm.
That's a clip from Youth Radio reporter Skylar Fisher's story. She's part of the WNC Youth Radio Reporting Institute here. I'm going to ask you the question that I asked Anthony and Emmanuel in a slightly different way. You were an activist. You were a volunteer for this organization, so clearly you believe in the process, right? And that's okay. You can do that and still be a reporter. Did you, in the process of doing the story, think any differently or learn anything more about this subject that you knew something about? You're a volunteer.
Right. I learned a lot about the subject, just mainly in the strategies that they employ. So, I mean, the meth pipe tape is pretty shocking to a lot of people, including me. When I first heard it, I was like, wow, this is pretty crazy. But it was hard for me to step back and be in this role, because when we go to these kind of places that are very personal to a lot of people, you know, addiction isn't something that people talk about with everyone. And so going to these spaces where people are telling their most intimate life stories, it was really difficult to report on that in an objective way, because I was feeling so sympathetic toward their
struggles. What did you do? How did you separate yourself?
With a lot of help from my editors.
Yeah, that's where the mentoring all comes in, and why institutes like this, in my opinion, are very important. I'm going to go around the table here briefly and ask you, what was the hardest thing about this whole thing? Or maybe it's what did you learn, but what was hard about this project itself? Not just the story, but learning radio.
Well, radio itself I found really interesting, just because it is just a group of people who are really dedicated to doing something, like, truthfully. So taking myself out of it was one of the most difficult parts for me, because I, of course, want to advocate for it 110%, and then I had to realize that's not really what my story's about. It's about, telling people what it is, telling people what harm reduction is, and exposing them to it, which is much more important than me, you know, really advocating as hard as I can, you know.
Emmanuel, what about you? Just in terms, and this is your second year here, so you've really learned a lot. You're going to take my job soon.
I'm trying.
I could just tell. What have you learned here, and what do you think is kind of the most challenging part of radio for you?
So in terms of most challenging, my story was really broad, or just the achievement gap side of it. You know, it was a really large topic, so trying to find, like, a specific group, or trying to find, like, a small portion of it to talk about. And, you know, we only have 4 minutes, so it's like, how am I going to still get the same impact that I want to in only 4 minutes? That was extremely difficult.
How about you, Anthony? Radio?
The writing. honestly. Writing for me, I like to write complex. And so for radio, everything had to be simple and clear. And so that was hard for me, just trying to make sure that I'm not too focused on perfection in my writing, but more so being okay with the fact that you can still be write simple and still get an important message across.
Yeah,
to your
write
audience.
Simple and not for seventh graders. So you have to write intelligent sentences that don't have a lot of subjunctive clauses. We can all go look that one up because those are important not to put in your radio piece. Kamaya, what have you learned over the 6 years of doing this and working with these great students?
Boy, that, you know, 16-year-olds pack a lot of punch and have, like, so many ideas. Just seeing them grow and learning how to balance a lot of stories and keep fresh ideas, you know, to help them continue their process is one of the things that I really learned this year, because everybody's story was somewhat serious, and so something that didn't work for one of them would work well for the other. So I learned how to, you know, with the help of Allison, learn how to combine those things and, like, really help them grow. So it's been really great just seeing the progress each year that we get.
Great stuff. We're going to miss you, but we know you're coming back next year.
And, you know.
And it'll be great. Been talking with Kamaya Truitt-Martin, who is the project mentor for the Youth Reporting System, and reporters Emmanuel Tobe, Anthony Howard, and Skylar Fisher, three of the Youth Radio reporters for this year's Reporting Institute at WUNC. Youth Radio stories are going to air on Saturdays on WUNC through September, and then you can go to the station's website and read more about their work. You can also hear it there. And, of course, if you missed that, just go to our website, and we'll put you in touch. State of Things produced by Anita Rao, Charlie Shelton-Orman, Laura Pelliser, and Jennifer Brookland. Robin Copley is our technical director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.